Yes.
Jaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I think it's text number 22. Mai ananyena bhavena bhaktim kurvanti ye dridham matkrite tyakta karmanas. Text number 22, 325-22, yeah. Chakta svajana bandhavaha mai ananyena bhavena bhaktim kurvanti ye dridham matkrite chakta karmanas. Chakta svajana bandhavaha. Okay. They try to be here.
Either the Kalva Prabhuji. Ye wala 22.
Yes.
Manane bhavane.
Mad ananyena bhavena.
Bhaktim
kurvanti ye dridham
matkrite
tyakta karmanas
satte adnavandva
satta svajana bandhavaha. Unto me, ananyena bhavena, with undeviated mind, bhaktim, devotional service, kurvanti, perform, yea, those who dridham
staunch
matkrite
for my sake
tyakta renounced karmanaha
activities
tyakta
renounced
Svajana, family relationships, Bandhava, friendly acquaintances. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances within the world. Purport. A person in the renounced order of life, a sannyasi, is also called a sadhu, because he renounces everything, his home, his comfort, his friends, his relations, and his duties to friends and family. He renounces everything for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Did you read this yesterday? 22? Or did 21? Mayananyena bhavena?
No.
Okay. Alright. A sannyasi is generally in the renounced order of life, but his renunciation will be successful only when his energy is employed in the service of the Lord with great austerity. It is said here, therefore, bhaktim kurvanti ye dridham. A person who seriously engages in the service of the Lord and is in the renounced order of life is a sadhu. The sadhu is one who has given up all responsibility to society, family, and worldly humanitarianism, simply for the service of the Lord. As soon as he takes birth in the world, a person has so many responsibilities and obligations to the public, to the demigods, to the great sages, to the general living beings, to his parents, to the family forefathers, and to many others. When he gives up all such obligations for the sake of the service of the Supreme Lord, he is not punished for such renunciation of obligation. But if for sense gratification, a person renounces all such obligations, he is punished by the law of nature. Ashwamedham gavalambam. What is it? Sanyasam palapaitrikam. Devarena sutot pati. Kalau pancha vivardiyet. According to the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, these five are forbidden in Kali Yuga. To offer the horse sacrifice or cow sacrifice. Generally, when you perform soma sacrifice, even the simple one-day soma sacrifice, the most basic soma sacrifice, there are the simpler ishti rituals are included. They must all be performed. It's like each more complex sacrifice is built on top of the previous sacrifices and include all the previous elements. So soma sacrifice is in a higher category. Soma is offered. Then the sacrifices of seven kinds, basically, in which soma is not sacrificed. But the pashubandha, or the offering of an animal as a victim, is there in all the soma sacrifices. Because there is an ishti pashubandha, the animal sacrifice. And therefore, a soma sacrifice has to include that also. So even in the simplest soma sacrifice, there's supposed to be an animal slaughtered. But Vaishnavacharyas, Madhva, and others have decided that in Kali Yuga that is forbidden. That there should be a substitute offering of purodasha, rice cakes, as a replica of the animals. The animals should not actually be killed in the sacrifice. Forbidden in Kali Yuga, especially cow offering and horse offering. Ashwamedham and Gavahalambam. And then third of the prohibited performances is the acceptance of sannyas. Palapaitrikam, and offering flesh to the forefathers in the Shraddha ceremony. Meatballs. The pinda, they have the meat. But in Kali Yuga, I think it's almost universal that they offer purodasha, rice cakes, instead. I don't know, are anybody performing Shraddha with meat in Kali Yuga, in this modern age? They aren't?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it, okay. You know, everything goes on. But normally, yeah, I mean, decent people don't, they follow that injunction. They don't offer flesh to the forefathers in the Shraddha. Although the forefathers eat kravyam. They eat flesh. Havyam is for the devatas, demigods. And for the pitras, kavyam. Meat. But we offer the meat to a substitute, rice cake. Because the Brahma Vaivarta and some Dharma Shastras forbid it. And then devarena sutotpati. Begetting a son by a child by the elder, by the younger brother. That means the older brother dies and his wife is left a widow. The younger brother can beget a child. But not in Kali Yuga. Vyasa was not brother. He was a distant relative. But still, the mother of Vyasa asked him to beget the children of the wives of Vichitravirya, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so that was a special request. But normally it's the younger brother who can substitute for the older brother if he's deceased. But not in Kali Yuga. So sannyas is supposed to be forbidden in Kali Yuga. argument is given against the over-literal application of that by the Acharyas in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jiva Goswami and others, that that's only one statement. The same Brahma Vaivarta gives the vidhi, the regulations, how to take sannyas. You know, gives the actual method, what you're supposed to do if you take sannyas. Well, sannyas is forbidden altogether, why is it giving injunctions how to do it? So that has to be reconciled. The reconciliation offered by, what I read was by Narayan Maharaj, so I don't know where he got his information, I'll just credit it to Bhaktivedanta Narayan Maharaj, who said that his explanation is that it's the non-devotee should not take sannyas. But the Vaishnavas in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and in the other Vaishnav lines, they practice sannyas also. The Madhva and Ramanuja Sampradayas, they have their sannyas. They're not ignorant of the statement of the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. But there are other statements in the same Brahma Vaivarta Purana and in many Dharma Shastras describing how to take sannyas. In Kali Yuga even. So for the service of Krishna, for the preaching mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the risk of taking sannyas can be taken. But otherwise no. Especially the risk is that many, Prabhupada says, if for sense gratification a person renounces all such obligations to family and so on, he is punished by the law of nature. In Kali Yuga, it's simply a racket. Becoming a sadhu is a way to make an easy living without working. That's all it is. And especially family life is disrupted in Kali Yuga. There's so much quarrel and difficulty for even two or three people to live together under the same roof. The man who's frustrated with it puts on saffron and becomes a sadhu. Easy life. Dump your family and live off the land for free. That is condemned, and it is grounds for being punished by the laws of nature. Renouncing for the sake of convenience. For sense gratification. People will give you money, they'll give you everything, they'll give you, widows will approach you, and you'll have so much opportunity for enjoying in the name of renunciation. And it goes to the extent that Baba knew somebody in Calcutta who every morning would put on saffron, a householder, go to work as a beggar, come back in the evening and take off the saffron, and be with his family in the evening. It doesn't matter. It's just a business. But that business is condemned. The real sadhus, the real sannyasis, as Prabhupada describes in this purport, the previous verse discussed sadhus in general. This verse describes especially the renunciation practice of the sadhus. So some sadhus are grihasthas, some sadhus are sannyasis. But some grihasthas are very renounced, some sannyasis, unfortunately, are not so renounced. But in general, a sannyasi is one who's given up family life. Our Prabhupada says in the purport, a person in the renounced order of life, a sannyasi, is also called a sadhu because he renounces everything. And what does everything mean? His home, his comfort, his friends, his relatives, and his duties to friends and family. He may still accept money in the service of the Lord. He may build an ashram. But in Prabhupada's opinion, the subtle or slight attachment a sannyasi may have to his ashram is not on the same level of the heavy attachment of a grihastha to his home. Now, if it is being used for the service of the Lord, and not just a hangout for parasites who want to drink tea and listen to the radio and read newspapers and do nothing, practice no sadhana, then if it's not degraded to that level, then a sannyasi's ashram, a sadhu's ashram, is not on the same level of heavy attachment as that of the materialistic householders. But there are some householders, a few, who are not very attached. Srivast Thakur, perfect example. He maintained a big household. But he didn't pay much attention to doing business to maintain that household. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was curious. And Chaitanya Bhagavat described that he asked Srivastava Thakur, how do you do it? You have such a big household. Everybody's taken care of. I don't see what you're doing. You're not working. I don't see you working a job. What's your secret? What's your method? Srivastava Thakur answered without opening his mouth by clapping his hand three times. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu laughed and said, what does that mean? What's that, you know, what does that indicate? And he said, if I go 3 days and no food on the table for everybody, then I'll just jump in the Ganga and commit suicide. Yeah, that was his method for maintaining his family. Some culpa that somehow Krishna will provide. If he doesn't, okay, we'll just kill ourselves. That's rare level of renunciation for a grihastha. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had one disciple who would every month take his paycheck and give the entire paycheck to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati as a donation. Wouldn't keep any of it for himself. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would accept it, thankfully, and then the devotee's wife would have to go the next day to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and ask for some of the money back so they could maintain the family. And he would give back. Every month this happened. That's also renunciation. Prabhupada asked, although I don't know who has ever followed it, that grihastha should give 50% of their gross income, off the top, to the service of the Vaishnavas and Krishna. They should renounce half of their gross income. I don't know any. Maybe there are some rare cases of grihasthas who have ever done that. Actually given 50%. It's harder for rich people. But Prabhupada asked that too. Prabhupada, apart from that, maybe that was just a little hard to put into practice, that regulation. It was a nice idea, but most grihasthas can't do it and give 50% of their gross income. They need it. They're struggling to survive. They need their money. But Prabhupada wanted it. Beyond that, Prabhupada expected a very high level of renunciation on the part of all his disciples. So let's say a very high level of dedication. Renunciation is just secondary. If someone has given his whole life to Krishna, then there's no renunciation is already a done deed. He doesn't have anything left. He's signed everything over that he's got, including his body, to Krishna. So he doesn't own anything. He doesn't have a right to renounce anything. Just like I'm sorry if I told this before, but if somebody comes to the Sunday feast, a guest, and says, I'd like to donate this car to the temple, and the temple president is happy to hear that, the man shows the car parked across the street. Yes, I'm donating it. But the temple president, he's not a fool. He says, well, you do have the title, the papers of the car. And the man's emeritus, I'm sorry, it's not really my car. Yeah. So what's the use of that donation? Yeah. It's useless. We can't renounce something we don't own. And if we're sold out devotees, if we're actually living up to the standard that Prabhupada wanted of all of his idols, we don't have anything. We've already, you know, turned everything over to the service of Prabhupada. So there's nothing left to renounce for us. And he expected even his grihastha disciples, you know, his sannyasi disciples, his brahmachari disciples, to be giving their whole lives to the preaching movement. That maybe, you know, we don't want to be utopian dreamers about the past, about the way it used to be in ISKCON, because maybe our remembrance is a little not completely clear about the way it really was. But at least it was expected that we would give everything, that we would be sold out to the mission and just work for the mission. And we didn't have any private lives, any separate lives, at least theoretically. Prabhupada sent three pairs of his Grihastha disciples to London, and they preached like anything and established ISKCON in Europe. Grihasthas. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's top sannyasis couldn't do the same thing 30 years before. They failed. They established, you know, one small ashram with one lady disciple sitting there, the London Gaudiya Mutt, and that's it. You know, they didn't make devotees. They couldn't stay there. They had to give up and come back because they couldn't deal with the malechas. They couldn't come down, you know, and get their fingers dirty, you know, dealing with malechas. So they couldn't really preach. The big sannyasis of the Gaudiya Mutt. But Prabhupada sent his grihasthas because they were dedicated. They were ready to give everything they could to Prabhupada, you know, holding on to nothing for themselves. At least we can see from the results. That's the level of renunciation that Prabhupada wants from us. Nowadays, at least in many parts of the world, devotees are having problems living up to that standard of selflessness. You know, instead we're pursuing our petty lives and giving something to Prabhupada's mission. But really, Prabhupada wants us to give everything, at least as much as we can. So that's when Prabhupada's talking about renounced order. He doesn't mean that just for the few of carrying dandas, but for everybody. A life of renouncing everything. Our house, our comfort, our friends, our relatives, duty to friends and to family. We should renounce all material association. All association of those who are not sincere devotees of the pure devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When the Grihastha devotees from, I think, Srikhanda were visiting Mahaprabhu at the Rathyatra in Puri, the delegation had an opportunity to darshan with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the Grihasthas asked, what is the duty of a devotee, of a Grihastha devotee? We're Grihasthas, not like your great renounced disciples like Rupa and Sanat and Surup Damodar. We're just Grihasthas in the village. So what are we supposed to do to please you? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's answer was, Asat Sang Tyag, a Vaishnava Achar. The business of a Vaishnava, in general, is to give up materialistic association. Give up the association of materialistic people and materialistic things. You know, that's renunciation. That's a renunciation that we all should be practicing. You know, we may have some attachments to something. Maybe somebody likes to play the harp or the guitar or something, which is irrelevant. You know, maybe it's usable in Krishna service. I don't know. Playing the harp. I don't know. But maybe it's just frivolous. So we all have something we can give up. Some of us have a lot we can give up. And that's the basic business of a Vaishnava. When we give up all asatsanga, then we can progress to the higher levels of devotional service. Then we can become seriously involved in the loving service of Krishna, in the prosecution of the mission of our acharyas. Hare Krishna. Okay, any questions or comments? Not any gods. Forefather, the Pitris. Mm-hmm. Why don't they?
Why do they?
The Pitris?
Mm-hmm. The demigods don't eat meat?
I don't think so. No, I said the demigods eat havyam, which is nice things cooked in ghee, or ghee itself, straight ghee, or sometimes things fried in ghee. I'm vegetarian. Mm-hmm. I don't think Swargaloka they have non-veg. I don't know. I don't think so. It's supposed to be a sattvic environment.
Pitri
Loka is a tamasic place. And down there, it's non-veg. If you don't like that, don't go there.
It's not
heavenly. It's subterranean. Bilasvarga. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Garuda is also non-vegetarian. He's a great devotee. Yeah, yeah, okay. It's a Garuda, you know, Garuda down here.
It's only a certain set of people, a certain set of ancestors that choose to go to.
Yeah, not everybody's ancestor goes to Pitriloka. If you want to be in that role, I want to be, you know, what I think of myself as an ancestor. Because
mm-hmm.
everybody's got ancestors, but not every ancestor is in the role of Pitri, living on Pitriloka.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you don't want to be involved with non-veg diet, then you shouldn't go there.
Chinese people, probably.
Chinese?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably was loaded with Chinese. The same scripture that forbids it.
So that maybe that it's just the same scripture that's coming out, but not in the same.
Possibly. But it may be that it even mentions Kali Yuga, that in Kali Yuga sannyas is taken in this way.
Oh, I see.
Buddha was preaching nonviolence.
Yes.
Because people were abusing these sacrifices.
Yes.
And, so, why didn't he just accept this injunction from a Bhagavad Purana instead of rejecting the Vedas altogether?
Well, there was more to his agenda. He actually
mm-hmm.
wanted to promote atheism. That was his secret agenda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to promote materialists becoming more materialistic.
Yeah.
So, you know. Otherwise, he didn't have to reject the Vedas. He could have did what Madhvacharya did, you know, established the standard that the soma sacrifice should be done with rice cakes instead of actual slaughter. But Buddha was much more radical. He rejected the Vedic authority, the Varnashram society, and everything. Yeah, he was preaching out and out atheism intentionally
because it was more appealing.
It's more appealing, and you know, Kali Yuga has got to go on. It's got to progress, and in order to push on Kali Yuga, we need to promote atheism. So God Himself comes in. Who's going to do it? So Buddha Himself, Vishnu Himself, came and did it, and then later on Shankaracharya came and gave a real push to atheism. Yeah, God Himself, and then Lord Shiva. Nobody else is powerful enough to establish atheism in Kali Yuga.
But Jesus says, sannyas should not be taken in Kali Yuga.
No, sannyas should be taken for the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for preaching only, not for sense gratification, not for convenience, but for preaching. Definitely, that's the opinion. And Yogaswami himself did not take sannyas, but he was not against it. Some of his god brothers were sannyasis. Other disciples of Mahaprabhu, he had 9 principal sannyasi followers. Vishnu Purti, Brahmananda Purti, Brahmananda Bharati. You know, these were great sannyasis. Prabodhananda Saraswati took sannyas. Yes? Originally they were family men, but then they became renounced without taking sannyas. They put on the Babaji Vesh. They put on Paramahamsa Vesh without taking sannyas. Okay, so they became Paramahamsas, but they didn't formally take sannyas. They didn't wear rakta. But they were not against it. They had one sadhana. Prabodhananda Saraswati had a different sadhana. He took sannyas. Sarup Damodar took sannyas. Nityananda Mahaprabhu took sannyas. Some took sannyas, some became Babajis. Although the term Babaji is not even Sanskrit. It's not, you know, nobody, I don't think they, maybe the Brij Basi is called Sananda Goswami Babaji. Maybe that's where it came from, but it's, you know, it's not a formal term.
Bhikshu became bhikshus.
Yeah, bhikshus. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
A bhikshu, but in Sanskrit traditionally bhikshu refers to the Buddhists. Yeah. 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 I'm sorry.
I read that what the Rupa has written.
Yes. Yes.
4 lakhs.
Jiva Goswami wrote 4 lakhs.
No, Rupa has written.
No, he wrote a lot, but it was Jiva Goswami who wrote 4 lakhs of shlokas.
I read that what Rupa has written.
Yes.
He used to edit it.
He was editor, yes. Rupa Goswami asked him to edit.
Huh?
His books, Ananta Goswami's books, Raghunath Das Goswami's, Rupa Goswami asked Jiva Goswami to do the editing.
Yes.
What was the quality of Jiva that Rupa said to you?
Jiva had special training. He was sent by Nityananda Prabhu to Benares to study Vedanta and other shastras, Nyaya. And so he was had special expert training in all shastras.
Right.
If Jiva Goswami didn't take sannyas, did he know that his body was cremated then?
Oh, no, it's in samadhi. I don't know Jiva Goswami, maybe only after Jiva Goswami. Yeah, Gopal Bhatta and Krishna's Kaviraj. Those three were cremated, because the Muslims were desecrating at that time. The three of them, they're all buried at the same place, but they all died on the same Akadasi in different years.
Mm.
But Jiva Goswami, I don't know. He may have just been put in samadhi.
It's not
then
that only
sannyasis
can be
put in
samadhi.
Any guru? Generally sannyasis and infants.
Infants?
Yeah. And cows? Cows or what?
They're making samadhi
for cows. I read that Meera intend to meet Jiva Goswami.
Well, story is there, but we're not sure if it's true.
And he said that we never meet Prakriti.
Yes.
So Meera shook back again. She said, I never knew that there is another Purusha in Vrindavan except Lord Krishna.
Yes.
I never knew it.
Yes.
And then Jeev came to know that she is a Brahmgyani.
Yes.
Meera has written something very far, far from the...
Does Papa confirm that story?
No.
Yeah, I don't know if we're so. That story may not be true.
That story first appeared.
It's a popular story, but
in 1712.
Aha.
And in the Paktika Sambodhini of Priyadas, who's commenting on Paktamala of Nahadas.
Which that means, I'm sorry, that's
Paktamala.
That's Balabhasampradaya.
No, that's Ramanandi Sampradaya.
Ramanandi. So the story appeared in a book by one Ramanandi.
However, Priyadas.
In the 17th century.
Priyadas was a Gaudiya Vaishnava in the Radharaman line.
Hare Krishna.
So, that's
a little complicated.
He's one of these representatives of this whole Braj wing of Gaudiyas, who seem to have been neglected by Arya-targa.
Okay. Okay, I'm not saying the story is not true, but we have some doubt about it. We're not sure if it's true.
Ramananda Rai has written many grants.
I only know
lying unused. Nobody has bothered to open it and all that. I have been twice to Ramananda Rai's house.
You mean Ramananda Rai where? In Puri?
Alarnath ke paas uska ghar hai. Ramananda Rai. He was a Patnaik and some granth are lying there sealed.
Really? Let's get it.
Nobody has bothered to
yes.
Take it out and get it printed.
He was a dramatist.
You should use your heavy skills on wrestling with manuscripts.
Where is the place in Puri?
Near that bridge.
Near Puri.
That bridge. The bridge near the entrance.
I have been thrice to that place.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, we're too white. You can go there.
Kattu Maharaj said to keep it in a glass house so that this script may not go waste.
Oh, manuscripts. When you start talking about manuscripts, it's very
500-year-old manuscripts.
Very depressing what they're doing with these manuscripts.
No, anyway. Okay, let's see if we can get it.